Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
The president's gone. He's overseas.
Yes.
I wonder who's running the store. I mean, does that mean that we're unsafe now? The president's not in the White House.
No, you know? Pence has got it under control.
Oh, Pence will take care of that. It used to be said if the legislature wasn't in charge, you didn't have to worry. They couldn't write any new laws. But laws are written by the executive branch, by the bureaucrats, by the judicial branch, and it just goes on and on, and the spending continues, and it's all on autopilot. But the president's there. I'm sure he'll stay in close touch. I'm sure that he'll have that little box with him, and just hope and pray that he never has to use it. But, you know, people are starting to talk about, you know, the use of force, whether it's going to be China, whether it's going to be Korea, whether it's going to be over Ukraine. I mean, it goes on and on, but there's always this threat, but also there's always the negotiations and something good to say about it, and it goes on. But today, what we heard was, you know, the first speech of the trip, and he was in Warsaw, and that's a historic place. They suffered tremendously in World War II, and Trump made some points about that, and some of the efforts had to be made to survive both Hitler and Stalin. Mm-hmm. The country exists, big thing is was the speech, and you know I listened to most of it, and the first part seemed, you know, it was general and it was nothing antagonistic, and it said a lot of flowering things.
Yeah.
You know, that's good. Yes, this is all good, but as it went on, I became more discouraged, especially when he brought up the subject of NATO, because NATO, of course, has been a big issue in the campaign as well as what's happened since then. And I'm sure you got a little bit of wind about what he's going to do for NATO. So what really is going to happen? Are we going to see a change in position or just a continuation of what we've had for a long time?
Well, I think the reason, you know, we're paying such attention to the speeches is the day before the historic meeting with Putin tomorrow on the sidelines of the G20 summit. So everyone's kind of wondering how he's going to set the stage. And as you point out, he set the stage with a pretty tough speech, aside from all the flowery history lessons, which I wonder how much he knew about. The main thing that struck me is that really that there was no new thinking in the speech. It sounded to me like it could have been given 3 years ago by Obama or last month by Hillary. You know, there's nothing new in it. And you mentioned the NATO. I think we have a clip here, just a little bit about what he said about NATO. And the top part is, you know, he's talking about how NATO members are finally paying up. Billions of dollars are pouring in, which, of course, is not how it's funded at all. But it makes for a good image, I guess. People are shocked. But then the second part is what's interesting. He says, to those who would criticize our tough stand, I would point out the U.S. has demonstrated not merely with words, but with its actions, that we stand firmly behind Article 5, the mutual defense commitment. That is key.
Okay, and you used the word new, and I understand exactly what you're saying, you know, compared to policy, you know, the last 5-10 years. But there's something different. I mean, we wouldn't have heard that statement during the campaign because his interpretation of America First is to being internationalist and to run the international programs and have troops everywhere and use a strong fist in order to get people to do what we want. So that is different.
Yeah.
And the biggest job we have is to figure this out. But he makes the point along this line that you're talking, that he was very critical of Russian destabilization. The Russians were destabilizing everything. But Obama, you know, did the same thing for the guy that we would have expected less of that. Obama did the same thing. You know, look how aggressive he was in Assad has to go and getting us all involved in Syria. So the party stuff doesn't seem to help us, and campaigning doesn't seem to help us. And it must be very superficially on the minds of the American people because, you know, once they hear something and they go on to the next stage, they're not concerned about, well, he really didn't say that, and we were doing something different. But I found one of the economic issues that came up there that sort of fascinated me, because sometimes economics is the driving force, you know, whether it has to do with oil or trade and taxes and this sort of thing. But he promised in at his speech this morning in Poland, that he wants to help them get a less dependent on Russia. So it's all Russia's fault. But Russia, you know, and this was one of the wonderful things about the end of the Cold War. The Russians have natural resources.
Yeah.
So it's very natural. If the governments would just leave them alone, they have natural resources, and they were able to provide, you know, energy supply, oil and gas, at the cheapest rate they've had. And this has been a blessing for the Russians and a blessing for the Europeans. But now our strategy and our goal of many, and evidently he's convinced some leaders in Europe. I'm not so sure the people, you know, are really gung-ho of saying, we don't like this cheap gas. So Trump's issue is America first. We're going to sell you the gas. And I got to thinking, well, I'm no gas expert. But a little common sense would tell me that having a big fat pipeline going a few hundred miles, you know, from Russia into Europe is a little bit different than us putting liquid natural gas and putting it on ships. I don't think we're going to put another pipeline in. And all of a sudden, that's going to be good? I mean, it's bad diplomacy. It's bad economic. It's bad for the consumer. And it's just more antagonism, you know, for this whole situation. That to me makes no sense. But I didn't hear and won't hear too much in the next several days of anybody questioning that. They'll still be dwelling on Russia interfere with our election. Russia interfere. But they're not going to talk about this silly notions on economics.
You know, it's interesting. Just before we started, President Putin, who will meet Trump tomorrow, as we pointed out, he had a response to the speech in Poland where he talks about some of these issues. And this is an interesting point that he made. This is a short quote. Protectionism is becoming the norm, while unilateral restrictions on trade and investment, as well as technology transfer, are nothing but masked protectionism. So he's condemning moves like this as really, you know, kind of a semi-mask protection.
Yeah, he understands this. So the peace dividend, I think there was a very, very small dividend, but it wasn't based on basic fundamental principles. It was still based on, you know, the planners, the deep state, the people who want to design the world and remake the Middle East and all this stuff. They went out. But common sense would tell us that there are some economic relationships that would be a blessing to everybody, but they're not allowed to operate. It's governments don't get in there to protect this. Governments get in there to interrupt it and capture the power and then, you know, blackmail people, intimidate people, and collect taxes to enhance the state, where if you have markets, what it does, it diminishes the state. And that's a big difference.
Yeah. And we have another clip, too, because this is something, it makes me wonder, and I don't know what your take is on it, but this is the day before the meeting with Putin. I'm wondering, is this just bluster? Is he covering his bases at home? I'll just read this part here. It talks about we have to meet new forms of aggression, including propaganda. He's probably talking about RT or something. But then he says, we urge Russia to cease its destabilizing activities in Ukraine and elsewhere, and to cease its support for hostile regimes, including Syria and Iran. Now, again, that could be written 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, this is, first of all, objectively, how much is wrong with that?
don't let anything die. Just keep it, anything that they can agitate with it. But this whole idea, I mean, we've gone over this so much about our influence in Syria and Ukraine and even Crimea. We dealt with this and tried to describe why that is a little bit different than United States taking over Syria, you know, and having troops in Syria and competing with the Russians, you know, in Syria. It's completely different legally, and it's completely different morally, and just think it's different geographically. I mean, going a long, long way for us to have interference militarily. So there's a lot wrong with that type of thinking.
And you know, the Ukraine situation was brought about by the U.S.'s coup,
yeah.
You know. Well, how is Russia destabilizing it? And now he's also saying that Russia should no longer have an alliance with Syria. So this is, to me, it seems like it's stepping back quite a bit.
You know, okay, go ahead.
No.
Now I was going to bring up another subject, and that has to do with what might come up tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because there's been a hint that Putin might bring up the subject of Yaroshenko. Yaroshenko, who's he?
Who's that?
You've read about him. You know about that. Uh-huh. This guy, he's a bad guy. He does drugs, and he's going to send drugs to the United States. So we had to deal with him. So we have the arrogance to go into Liberia to enforce our drug laws, arrest this Russian pilot under our drug laws and try him. Who knows what kind of trial he had, and sends him to prison for 20 years. I wonder where he is. Is he in Guantanamo or someplace? But he was sentenced for 20 years. Maybe they brought him back here and put him in prison. But he's been sentenced for 20 years under our drug laws, and it is suspected that Putin might bring this up because they've made diplomatic requests that he should be sent back to Russia, you know, to be dealt with. But to say that he is the culprit and the drug dealer, it doesn't surprise me that governments don't get involved in drug dealing, but it also suggested to me maybe there's a method to their madness about keeping these drug laws really tough because they've got to protect the children. Well, when you think of Iran-Contra, the CIA was involved in drug dealing. It's secret financing of what goes on. And here we have a drug law, Noriega, you know, we arrested him under the drug law and took him out of office, out of a country, and hauled him off to our prisons. You would think maybe they would get annoyed with this. So here we are in Liberia bringing peace and prosperity and democracy to Liberia, and we're in there deciding that we're going to arrest a Russian pilot. And this is not saying anything about, you know, the morality of that individual or criminal of him. I'm talking about our jurisdiction, which is wrong, it's aggravating, and can't serve any benefit at all.
Yeah, worldwide jurisdiction.
Yeah, there you go.
The world's policeman. You know, the other thing that came up is Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, gave a speech yesterday that was, as you said earlier, sometimes he seems a little out of sync with the president. You know, there were a couple of interesting things that Tillerson had to say. First of all, he floated this idea that the U.S. might be interested in discussing no-fly zones in Syria with Russia tomorrow, which is a strange thing to come up at the very end, or what appears to be at least the end of the war in Syria, with the Syrian government in the lead. But here's another thing that's interesting that he said. Russia has a responsibility to ensure that no faction in Syria illegitimately retakes or occupies areas liberated from ISIS. Think about that sentence. It's strange. Russia has the obligation to prevent anyone from taking that territory once it's liberated.
Yeah, well, the interventionist mind just operates differently.
I guess so.
Yeah, at least from our viewpoint. But what strikes us here is how different it might be on what Trump might have said, or figuring out what the real position is very difficult, because some seem to have more common sense, which is okay, and they should be talking it over. But it seems like a common sense and a good diplomatic approach to this would be at least they would talk from the same page to figure what's going on. But if Trump says one thing and Tillerson says something else, but it's a variation of intervention, then we have to try to sort it out and think about what are they going to say tomorrow? What will be the consequence of this? Are they going to listen to Tillerson? Are they going to listen to the president? Or are they going to listen to NATO? Or to whom are they going to listen?
And the other thing that Tillerson said, we said, we call on all parties, including the Syrian government and its allies, the Syrian opposition and the coalition, to avoid conflict with each other. Meaning, essentially, if you read between the lines, he's telling the Syrian government, don't have conflict with the opposition, which we should say is an armed opposition. A lot of it is jihadist. So it just strikes me as the height of arrogance. The U.S. is there illegally calling on all parties in a conflict that it shouldn't really legally be a part of to behave in a way that it thinks that it should.
Like those there legally might have zones that we'll call no-fly or neutral zones, and then we go and make our own.
Maybe make our own.
You guys are getting ahead of us. We'll have our own zone here, and don't step over. And then they actually shoot down planes and do all kinds of things because they overstep our boundaries. You know, they're aggressing against this. You know the old story about
if they shoot
at us committing aggression against them, they are the aggressors, and that's why we have to go to war.
It also reminds me of that Bush speechwriter that said, we create our own realities.
Yeah. You know, there was another part of his speech that hints to what he'll be bringing up, with Putin, because two big issues, and he blended them together, and that is that he has to deal with terrorism and bureaucracy. And it's interesting that he brought them together, but nobody defends terrorism. That's horrible and evil. It should be looked at in proper perspective. And who likes bureaucracy more than a libertarian? And it's very difficult. And he'll say the right things about bureaucracy, and he has done some decent things about the bureaucracy. But I don't think he would ever mention that the Pentagon may be a bureaucratic mess, that nobody knows anything that's going on, and they've never had an audit. I mean, we complain a lot about no audit of the Federal Reserve, but there's never an audit. Nobody knows. This is why it's endless spending and endless waste and $800 hammers and all this nonsense, because nobody keeps track of it. But so it's fancy words, and it's appealing to a lot of people. But if you're really interested, you have to look at, the bureaucracy at the Pentagon.
Yeah, $1 trillion goes missing, you know.
Yeah.
The other thing was funny when he talked about that, he was talking about terrorism, and he said, he essentially compares the old Soviet Union with the current terrorist threat. And he says, we're confronted by another oppressive ideology that seeks to export terrorism. And, so terrorism is the big threat. And then in extremism. And then the next sentence he's talking about, well, I had a meeting in Saudi Arabia with all these countries, and we're going to take care. So he's in a place where there's the number one exporter of terrorism, and he's going to tell us that we're going to take care.
You know, the one thing is to be against terrorism is sort of very sacred, and you have to have a certain animosity toward it, even if it's not rational, because who can tolerate or defend terrorism?
Yeah.
But statistically, we should worry a lot less about terrorism than some other things. And one statistic, and I believe it's fairly accurate, although you can find another statistic too, but basically, we as Americans have a 1,000% greater chance of getting killed by somebody on the street with a gun, domestic criminality, to one chance, 1,000 will be killed on the streets with guns and against one that might be killed by terrorism. And the few that have happened since 9/11 they've happened by mostly people that are born in this country, and none of them were born in these countries that were prohibiting people from coming in.
Yeah.
And that's not indicating that I think open up the borders and subsidize, all the immigrants coming in. But it should get this fear in a proper perspective. And I think the street violence, another person made a comparison, if you add up all the killing that our government does, with bombs and drones and unnecessary undeclared war that's been going on for 50 years, their killing compared to the people's, that happened, even this horrible number of 1,000 people getting killed on the streets. But nobody deals with the guns of government restricting them from doing it, but they want to take our guns away from, if there's 1% of the people using guns to kill people, and they should be, dealt with, but they want to take the guns away from the 99 people that might defend themselves. So they have it all twisted up because they don't deal from a position, of liberty. So how would you summarize all this and settle at this and tell Trump what he ought to do tomorrow or what he should say?
Well, I think the stakes are very high for this sideline meeting between Trump and Putin. And maybe Trump was trying to, signal that he's not going to be a pushover, and that's why he gave a tough speech. He felt like he had to put this image up, especially in Poland, which is the most Russophobic country in Europe. So, to be honest, I do not know what to expect tomorrow. I honestly don't know what to expect.
Well, that's the truth, and that's really my position. But I'm going to take a little step over and indicate that I expect a meeting that goes cordially, and that Trump will not walk out of that hearing meeting and press and all the attention he gets coming across as a bully, that he's telling this guy to his face what he's going to do. He talks tough one day. I just doubt if that's going to be in the news. If it is, that's a very, very bad sign. If he can't, at least, talk to Putin and not be bombastic and threatening. Now, President George Bush had a different reception. He went and met with Putin, and he came back almost, very calmed down and not aggressive at all. But I think Trump's going to maintain his position that we hear now, and is not doing what he said he's all about, and is not going to be what he campaigned on, but it's going to be aggressive. But I don't think it's going to be that aggressive tomorrow. But we'll wait and see, and maybe we'll be talking about that in the near future. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Come back soon.